proceed with the third case this morning, which is Charlie Reese versus Ice Cream Specialties. Mr. Baum.
Thank you. Good morning, may it please the court. Charles Baum for Charlie Reese, appellant and plaintiff below in this appeal versus Ice Cream Specialties. Mr. Reese was promised a raise when he started working at ICS, a six-month raise that was supposed to happen in February of 1997. He never received that raise. It was a raise that he was promised. Mr. Reese is a minority. Two non-minorities received the six-month raise. Two non-minorities that were similarly situated that were hired right around the time of Mr. Reese.
Mr. Baum, does the record show that some minority workers also received a six-month raise? Or just a stark, you know, Mr. Reese is a minority, he doesn't get it, all the people who are non-minorities do get it?
The record does show that some minorities and some minorities received a six-month raise. But what Mr. Reese does allege is that the two non-minorities that are the closest to him, the most similarly situated, Mr. Cooley and Mr. Sugar, one of them hired 4 months before Mr. Reese, and one of them hired only 1 week after Mr. Reese, both received the six-month raise. His allegations establish these are the two people that he should be most clearly compared to.
Now, what are we going to make of this mess of Bazemore? You have to agree, I think, that the courts have been all over the block trying to figure out what is a single act in the past such that later complaints are time-barred, and what kinds of things renew, as it were, with each paycheck. Why does yours fall on that side of the line?
Bazemore is strictly, in this case, is strictly regarding how much the employee is getting paid. The paycheck comes at the end of the cycle, at the end of the 2 weeks or the 1 week, as the case may be. The plaintiff, the employee, has worked for the time period and then gets the paycheck. He did not get the amount of pay that he should have. That ends that cycle, that pay period, the end of the situation for that one limited instance. That's when his time period starts to run.
But a lot of things affect paychecks. You know, seniority systems, for example, affect paychecks, and yet we've said that those are not the kind of things that you can complain about forever. You have to raise, you know, speak now or forever hold your peace, basically. Is it because the Supreme Court has drawn a line between raises specifically and virtually everything else? Or how does one create a rule of law here that employers can sensibly follow?
Well, the problem in the language of the U.S. Supreme Court case is that some of them follow Bazemore and some of them follow Evans, Ricks, and Lawrence. They don't compare each other and explain why it falls into one line or the other. They simply say it's this type of case. Promotions, transfers, benefits, it's a limited act. It is something that looks forward. It is something that is a decision, a discriminatory decision that has effects as long as the person works there, perhaps. It's different from a paycheck because the paycheck goes, the action is paycheck by paycheck. As Bazemore said, the key is whether the person is getting less than a non-minority.
Well, the key in Bazemore, however, is that before the Title VII or whatever, the Act of 1972, there were two distinct pay levels, one for blacks and one for whites. Clearly, you had a racially discriminatory pay scale that was unequivocal. Isn't that what first has to be shown here, is that there was a racially discriminatory pay scale in order for there to be, it be perpetuated through continuing paychecks? Don't you have to first, or the burden of showing that you have what, as in Bazemore, a discriminatory pay scale?
What Mr. Reese has shown in his pleadings is that there is discrimination and that the similarly situated white employees are getting paid a different amount than he is getting paid.
Well, that's where the question Judge Wood raised with the 11 other people who got the raise, four of them were minorities. Now you're saying, well, yeah, but they weren't exactly at the same time period. Nevertheless, he's citing 11 people in whatever document this is, I don't know what it is. Anyway, he's got this list, but it seems that that's going to be kind of a high hurdle to first show that there is, it wasn't just some inadvertent mistake that one black person or one minority got something that others got, didn't get something that others got who were at least similarly situated and of the same race.
That's correct. It is a high hurdle, and it's one that is going to be dealt with on the evidence in the lower court. Mr. Reese, under McDonnell Douglas, has properly alleged what he has to in a Title VII complaint.
I guess what I want to think about is the procedural posture of this case. This was done on summary judgment, but as I recall, the district court did not find that there were no issues of fact with respect to the discrimination allegation. He didn't think he needed to because of the other aspect of the case that he went off on. And so I'm wondering if the real point is at the summary judgment stage, taking the facts in the light most favorable to the non-moving party, are we at the moment at a situation where we would at least want the district judge to consider whether there are disputed issues of fact on the discrimination question? I take it if we had a memo in the file from the ice cream specialties company that said, we have decided not to give African Americans the 6-month raise because that way they'll have a lower base pay and it'll be cheaper for us over the years, that would look a lot like Bazemore. That would be, completely unequivocal evidence that there was racial animus behind this pay disparity. We don't have anything like that, of course, and for all I know, I make no statement about whether anything like that's happening, but can we, on this record, taking the facts in the light most favorable to your client, discern a disputed issue of fact on the question whether there's discrimination?
Well, that's a very interesting point because, essentially, ICS, in order to get the matter to summary judgment on their single limited issue, admitted many important facts, admitted that these two non-minorities did received the raise that Mr. Reese did not. Certain things were admitted by ICS seemingly to remove any question of fact so that they could go ahead and move for the summary judgment and eliminate Mr. Reese's argument that there were questions of fact.
I think that's exactly what they did. They admitted on all these things because the only issue they said was that it was not timely filed and therefore it's time barred, etc. So all these other things, I assume, are admitted on that on the condition of focusing on that issue, aren't they?
Right, and what this court did in footnote number one of its ruling did not look at the issue of failure to make allegations by Mr. Reese, look at this from a factual point of view in the light most favorable to Mr. Reese. What the lower court did in a confusing issue that has been in front of the courts many times is made a mistake as to lumping together promotions and raises in one basket, and that's simply not the way it is. Paycheck cases are dealt with differently from promotion raises, testing cases and things like that, and the court made that mistake in looking at the facts, made the mistake of lumping them together and making an incorrect legal ruling.
You're into your rebuttal time.
Thank you.
Mr. Younger.
May it please the court, counsel, good morning. Your honors, the district court was 100% correct in both the application of the law to the plaintiff's claim in this case and in granting the defendant's motion for summary judgment because the claim is time barred.
But Mr. Younger, would you agree that we have a problem reconciling the Bazemore and the Evans, et cetera, line of cases? And what would you do if, in your case, obviously hypothetically, the memo I postulated was in the file, we don't give African Americans 6-month raises because we just don't want to, but we give other people 6-month raises? Would you say that that is time barred under Bazemore?
It depends on the rest of the factual circumstances.
No, that's the only fact I want in there. It's exactly the same time as in your case. He's an African American. He doesn't get the raise. It's now a couple years later, beyond 180 days after that, and he discovers the memo. You know, somebody slips it to him or something. And now he brings a lawsuit. The Supreme Court may have come up with a crazy line in this area. It wouldn't be the first time, but as lower courts, don't we need to try to put this in the category it most aptly fits in?
I think what you need under Bazemore is either one of two things, and they've both been addressed here. First of all, the possibility that there is a policy which establishes a disparate pay between African Americans and non-minorities, which continues into the relevant time period.
Why do you need
to describe?
Yeah,
which is what you described.
Next question is, why do you need a policy in a disparate impact case? A disparate treatment case where it's been established for years that even if the firm otherwise is absolutely squeaky clean in terms of its policies with respect to people, if there's one individual who's not given a raise because of his race, that violates the law. You can be treating everybody else perfectly. And in a normal case, if we didn't have this timeliness issue, I'm sure you'd agree that person can state a claim. Maybe they can prove it.
As I've stated, there are two aspects to Bazemore. The first one is the policy, which
you're
not described.
But why is that an aspect? That happened to be the case there, but it wasn't
because of the claim made. The claim made in Bazemore was I was paid differently or less than similarly situated white employees.
Right.
It was a disparate pay claim.
Right.
Now, it's not. Every pleading filed with the district court, every sentence or every line, anything with the EEOC or the district court is I was denied a raise. Now, there is a distinction between a disparate pay claim and denial of a raise. For instance, a company can pay the plaintiff in this case, where one African-American employee $10 an hour, and all of the white employees and all the other employees $8 an hour. Now, it's pretty unlikely that the plaintiff can ever make a disparate pay claim. However, the company can give all the white employees a 50-cent raise and nothing to the one African-American employee. The African-American employee still makes $1.50 more, still cannot make a disparate pay claim, but could make that claim to say, I was denied a raise because of my race. They're separate and discrete acts of discrimination. Now, most companies are not that black and white with respect to everybody's paid the same, so you're going to have some people that go from $8 to $12 an hour. A company very well could lose a claim that I was denied a pay raise, but win a claim of disparate pay.
Well, a question I think I would want to follow with is, what we have a pro se plaintiff, and really it's kind of a mess that's not to be denied, and also not only is he pro se, but that we have this notice pleading situation. And the question I guess I would have is, does that preclude our looking at this as an original claim that there was a racially discriminatory pay scale, which is at least the way I see Bazemore is what has to be set out at the outset in order to have this continuing violation?
Yes, I believe it does. And here's why.
What does?
I believe it does preclude you from looking at claims which were not made at the district court level. There are, first of all, the defendant must defend the claims that are brought against it. And even under the notice pleading, the only claim brought in this repeatedly and reinforced by everything that the plaintiff sent, both to the EEOC and to the district court, was I was simply denied a raise in February of 97.
An automatic raise that everybody gets, that they were told that he was told everyone gets in 6 months. Right?
Exactly. African Americans and white employees,
right.
As the court pointed out,
but it turned out,
it was before the court.
Exactly, and I guess my concern here is the lack of factual development on these points. It seems to me entirely possible, one sees glimpses in the record of all sorts of things that your client would probably say if this had been something the district court had been thinking about, whether it was we gave it to him a month earlier or, you know, the facts don't bear it out or the relevant pool is all 11 people, not just these two. I mean, there's plenty of things in the record that I can see. But there's no joining of issue on them at the moment at the Rule 56 level. I think we have to take the facts in the light most favorable to Mr. Reese and say, suppose he could prove that there was discrimination. Does that bring it within the Bazemore rule?
No, because you must look at the claims raised by Mr. Reese, and he has one separate, distinct claim of I was denied a raise in February of 1997, which is a discrete discriminatory act.
But don't all of his future paychecks reflect the lack of that, whatever it was, you know, 50 cents?
Yes, that's a measure of damages.
But that's exactly, you could have said the same thing in Bazemore.
No.
You could have easily said every paycheck was too low and the measure of damages is the gap between the white pay scales and the African American pay scales and we'll let these people sue for the last 180 days. It would have been easy to have done that in Bazemore.
Easy but likely incorrect because the claim in Bazemore was I, an African American employee or employees, I should say, and being paid less than similarly situated white employees for the same work.
And isn't that essentially what Mr. Reese is saying? I, an African-American employee, and because I'm African-American, didn't get this six-month raise, while non-minorities did. Again, you know, just I'm not trying to make you say that's what happened, because
I understand that. Assuming that's correct.
Right.
Which I'm not going to admit, but assuming that's correct, which
yeah.
I think we had to do on the summary judgment stage under the rules, which any admission in that summary judgment is simply under the rules. We have to take the facts with the plaintiff
sure.
states.
No, we understand.
There is a separate and discrete act of discrimination alleged, which is I was denied a raise in February of 97. That is going to have, if true, continuing effects on how much money he is actually paid. But it is not the same as I am being paid less for the same work than similarly situated white employees, because in that situation, every 40-hour week that you do the same work as a similarly situated white employee and I pay you less is another discrete act of discrimination, and that's what Bazemore held. Now, Bazemore also had the second aspect that I explained, is you had a policy out there that enforced this. And so there's two aspects, and that's why your question is somewhat difficult. If we had a memo saying we're not going to give African-American employees raises, possibly that might fall into Bazemore.
I want to ask you that about this March 13th letter of 2001 from Robert Thiessen.
Yes.
He seems to acknowledge that there was this disparity in pay, and I can't really tell by the letter, but it seems that he's saying that we've rectified that.
Okay, two aspects of that. First of all, he does not acknowledge a disparity in pay.
Well,
he may acknowledge that he did not receive the full raise.
In summary, the complainant had a valid argument concerning not receiving a six-month increase in a timely manner.
Correct, which does not mean a disparity in pay. It means maybe he does have an argument that he didn't get the raise when he was
all
supposed
right,
to get the
I'm
raise.
I'm not going to get technical about the letter. Is this letter, it implies that the money was paid back, or he was paid.
That's correct.
Is that what your position is, that that was rectified?
Yes. The letter's accurate.
All right.
So you're saying he eventually got the six-month raise then?
There was a back pay check issued to him or added to his regular pay. I don't know whether it was a separate check or not. In I believe it was March of 2001, whenever the letter indicates. They went back and looked at his pay records, and there was a 10-cent discrepancy with what they thought he should get because of the head palletizer. Maybe that wasn't added on. I forget the exact details of it, but they issued him a back pay check in March of 2001. But that really is not relative
not
to the
45 cents an hour.
Correct. It was.
So there's still a dispute, in other words, about the 45 cents an hour.
You didn't
give it. Okay.
All right, thanks.
Thank you.
Mr. Mom. Thank you.
Nasmore makes no distinction between disparate pay over time and raises. It simply doesn't. It talks about disparate pay being the issue. Looking at what Judge Wood wrote in Pitts versus Kankakee in 2001, it states as long as the discriminatory paychecks keep coming, that is the issue. Whether paychecks that are less to the minority keep coming. That case does not at all talk about how they got that way. It could be less pay from when he started. It could be less pay based upon the failure to give a raise. That's the key behind it. This court also stated in Dasgupta in 1997 that the level being determined before the limitations period only looks at the fact that discrimination in the future was then predictable. Another case that does not at all look at how the pay got that way. It's only looking at the fact that each paycheck is less. That's the key. Bazemore does not make that distinction. Bazemore does not limit it to disparate pay, which seemingly, based upon the arguments of my opposing counsel, is that a Bazemore case only exists when the pay is disparate from when the person was hired. It has nothing to do with raises, according to Mr. Younger's arguments. That would mean that Bazemore only applies when the employee receives less at the date that he is hired, and then his time period for suing starts to run at the date he is hired. It has nothing to do with future decisions to give him less pay. I see my time is up.
Okay, thanks very much. That case will be taken under advisement.